I just started the recording. I hadn't even been recording yet.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and go.
Aren't you supposed to do the thing where you stop counting and you just do the fingers and you point at me?
I was waiting for that. That's much more of a visual medium.
That's a good point.
But I'm sorry, yes. That would probably be more accurate.
Well, I guess we're in now, so... Welcome, everybody, to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. This is Brandon.
And I'm Kevin.
Yeah, and we were just talking about how to come back to you, because it's been a while since we've recorded. I know that there are not that many of you that listen on a regular basis. But if you do, you may have been wondering, well, why haven't these dopes recorded in like a month?
But we've been thinking of you.
We've been thinking of you often. And
we've been thinking of you real. So, yeah,
let's make
it to that end. To that end, we go ahead.
We've actually, the problem has been that we had some technical difficulties with the program that we use to record. Mm-hmm. And we actually recorded a whole episode that Kevin, I don't mind saying, I think it's the best episode we ever made. I think,
yeah, I was trying to think earlier how to describe this. And I thought probably the best way to describe it is if all of your favorite podcastists took a bit of their podcast DNA and shoved it all together into CRISPR.
Yeah.
This would be like the child of that.
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
Maybe like the fourth child that no one pays attention to. But nevertheless, it was really quite excellent. It was kind of a peak. I'm concerned that it's going to be like our lost novel, that we won't ever achieve such heights again. But
it's possible.
I feel like now we've been to the mountaintop. We know how to get there. We know the path, and we know what the view is, and we like it. So we're going to try.
We are going to try. So the key is a magnificent episode. It's beautiful. Oh. We're going to actually tell you a little bit about what was in it in a little bit, because here's the thing. You're never going to hear it.
That's right.
You're never going to hear it. Here's why. Because we recorded the whole thing. We stopped. We just basked in the splendor for a moment, as though we had been kissed by an angel right on the forehead. And then we looked at our screens and discovered that it said, upload error.
Yes.
Upload error. And tried again and again, nothing.
That certainly can't mean that it didn't upload at all.
Right.
Just that it didn't do its best.
That's what our hope was.
Right, but no.
We're like, okay, so we're going to have a flawed version of this magnificent episode. No, we have no version of this episode. So,
except
so,
it
yeah,
in
we,
our heads. Now it's all going to be legend.
It's legend. It's
and we are the bearers of that legend. So yeah. This is that's in and of itself. There's a certain level of excitement to that, right? A certain I'm eager to kind of tell this tale.
Yeah. So, think of it this way. Think of the best podcast episode you've ever heard.
Yep.
No, that's not enough. Think of the best cultural experience you've ever had of any kind, any medium.
Right.
Could be podcast, movie, the first time you heard your favorite musician, the first time you saw an episode of Caroline in the City, and you were like, this
Caroline
is
Caroline in the City. What the hell is that?
Unlocked the doors of perception for me, right? Whatever it might be.
That was Caroline in the City.
Are you not familiar with the show Caroline in the City?
I know, unfortunately, the show Sex in the City.
No, I believe this was, maybe I've got the name wrong. I got to double check. This was there's a show called Caroline. Let me make sure. Let me see. Yeah, it is. Okay. Wait, good, good.
Let me check my, I got let it. Me check my notes.
This was part of the must-see TV. Oh, good. Check your notes. This was part of the must-see TV Thursday night block in the mid-90s. And it was a show starring Leah Thompson.
Oh, that sounds... that of...
Yeah, it was not good. It was a bad show.
So now I'm starting to recall this a little bit, because I recall, as often happens, things that you really don't like.
Yeah.
You remember better than things you like sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing, because that was a high point for NBC, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they were at the height of their powers then.
They were. And that was like that was
basically any crap they threw in the air was going to get watched.
It was right. It was like for a Roman while Empire that crap. At a certain point.
For a while, that crap was called Caroline in the City.
And that Caroline in the City is like the late period Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Just. Yeah, but I remember, so I would see that, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to. So yeah, that stuck in my head just because of its how much I didn't want to.
Yeah. By the way, in case you don't remember, because you don't, the premise of the show was that this was a successful cartoonist living in Manhattan, whose eclectic friends were sometimes the subject of her comic strip. So I'm assuming this was basically this was like Kathy.
Well, that sounds kind of like Sex and the City, actually.
It does.
Wait it a does. Second now.
But this was before Sex and the City.
But that's what I'm saying. Isn't that unusual?
And it was on network TV, so there was definitely no sex.
But you see what I'm getting at, right?
I do. I do. Because Sex and the City is a writer living in Manhattan whose friends are sometimes the subjects of her columns.
Could it have been that was not as... creatively fresh as we all thought it was?
It's shocking.
Sex and the City?
I'm...
Because I know my reaction to Sex and the City was...
Wow.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Something you've maybe never seen before.
No.
There was a guy named Andrew Lauer who I... In this Sex... The Caroline in the City show. Who looks a bit like Matt Lauer, but it doesn't appear to be related to him. Which is unusual.
Well, he looks like him because they're both white guys.
Can't tell them apart.
No, they're all the same. Are you Kevin or Brandon right now, by the way? I can't even tell.
I am.
I don't know which one you are.
I am Dale. I am your father. No. Yeah. So anyway, we did not.
By the way, now that Caroline City. No, we're down the rabbit hole because now I looked up Andrew Lauer, and on Wikipedia, after we hear about his early life and his career, we have this: other interests. Developed an interest in toxic mold remediation after a home renovation went awry, went on to attain professional certifications and start a mold remediation firm in Santa Monica, California.
That really just sounds like that's the best spin ever on could not get any more acting jobs.
That's correct. That's
right? Wow.
Couldn't act anymore. Couldn't afford to hire someone to remediate his mold problem, so became a professional. Which, I mean, this would not be unlike if we said, you know, in the year 2020, Brandon Woosley developed an interest in fixing all the broken shit in his home.
Right. Kevin Woosley, after a successful career in the print industry, developed a love for urban camping in cars and under bridges.
Right. That's exactly right. So anyway, if you were like thinking to yourself, like just think about the greatest piece of cultural experience you've ever had, this podcast would have destroyed it.
Yeah.
Would have made that look like the comic strip Kathy.
It might have destroyed it in the same way that black mold destroys things.
Indeed. Indeed.
If we're going to really just want to sliver of honesty in there.
So
no, it was good. It was good.
But it's
though.
Gone.
We had a lot of, you know, I had some borderline off color jokes. Lots of good banter.
Indeed.
Everybody loves banter.
Yeah.
So
in fact, I think there was a lot of good banter and there was repartee.
Oh, there was in spades.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. And there was some calling a spade a spade. No, there wasn't. Are
Let's
we?
Move on.
Is that a phrase that can we? No, I don't. We can't use it.
I'm going to assume that
we're
gonna
stay away from that.
Probably racially insensitive.
Oh, I'm yeah. I suspect it is, and I don't mean to. I brought it up specifically to mock it. But yeah, it's pretty confident that it's racially insensitive. So, we should tell people at least a little bit of the premise, because we are. Here's the thing: this is the other part that's so sad about it, is that what we did for the most part could not be exactly replicated. Our first thought was, well, can we do it again? But we can't, and we can tell you about it. We can do something built off of it again in the future, and we will. We're actually going to do that in the near future. But what we did in this episode was Kevin had acquired for us two packs of baseball cards. If you've listened to our episode where we talked about the book, The Wax Pack, we thought, well, that's, you know, it would be fun to open up packs of cards like that. And Kevin got two packs of cards from the year 1984, which is a pretty central year for our baseball fandom, wouldn't you say, Kevin?
It was.
I was 14. You were 12. I mean, that was a great year. First great year for the Cubs in our lifetime.
Well, and we talked about this. We even gave propers to the Chicago White Sox, because
that's right.
Then just coming off of the White Sox having a division winning season, and at that point we were, you know, kind of the whole city was very high on that, and we got carried up and carried away.
Yes, we did.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and it was a little mini golden age for Chicago baseball, and. Yes. So Kevin got these packs, and the thought was, let's open the packs, and one at a time, we're gonna take turns revealing cards, and we realized, let's make it a little bit competitive, because let's treat it like a game of war, like the card game War, and see, like, each time you flip a card, who had the better card that time. Mm-hmm. So here's the really hilarious thing: if you look at the whole pack, I had the better pack.
Clearly, you had that sort of pack that every kid dreams of getting when they buy a pack of baseball cards.
I did, absolutely. In fact, even if I had opened this pack of cards in 1984, I would have been blown away. So, like, now, here's the thing. There are two Hall of Famers in this pack. There are two players that were, like, that were greats many times over. There's a person who now is going to be in the Hall of Fame someday as a manager. And so there was, you know, it was a ton of great cards, but even if I had been opening this in 1984, I would have been like, Fred Lynn, that's one of the best players in baseball. In fact, in 1984, I would have thought Fred Lynn might still be going to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. I would have looked at Rick Sutcliffe, and as a Cub fan in 1984, that would have been very exciting for me as the year went on, because he ended up winning the Cy Young Award in 1984.
Yeah, and there was a lot of real excitement about him being acquired, too,
yes,
at the same time. So yeah, then picking him up there, you would have been like, dang. Uh-huh. Plus, that was also the interesting thing, because he had two separate cards in 1984, right?
I believe he did,
had the Indians card, which was the team he started with.
Mm-hmm.
And then
they wouldn't have made, because he didn't get traded until June, so it would. There,
well, then
wouldn't
in the
have
traded
Cubs cards
in the traded set that would come out at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's true.
Been a Cubs Rick Sutcliffe Cubs card.
So additionally,
but it was always interesting to see have a card where the player wasn't on that team any longer. At least I
thought
true. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was even cooler when the trade had happened early enough, late enough that they couldn't retake the card pick photo, but early enough that they could run it back through a press and put on their traded to, you know, Expos or something. We didn't have any of those.
No.
Unfortunately, but yeah.
But then I got a Ryan Sandberg card.
Which, MVP season.
So in reality, this is 1984 cards.
Yes.
I have the 1984 National League MVP and National League Cy Young winner in the same pack. And a Mike Schmidt card, who already at that point was clearly one of the greatest players in baseball, a Hall of Famer for certain. So, like, that, to get like four cards of that quality in one pack, I'm not sure I've ever had that experience. and they happened. Right. It happened here. So I get those four amazing cards. Well, not surprisingly, I won all four of those rounds.
Yes, you did.
But
you won one other round.
Or one other round.
Two other rounds.
But yeah, Kevin actually had the better overall, like flip by flip, more often than not. Like I would have a, you know, what did I have? I would have a Floyd Rayford.
Right.
And Kevin had somebody a little better.
And I might have Manny Sarmiento, and you might be saying, well, that's a race to the bottom, which perhaps it is. But yeah. Manny Sarmiento was marginally better based on the numbers on the back of that card.
Right.
So Manny Sarmiento takes the win. Manny Sarmiento pitcher for the Pirates at that time.
That's right.
So I went 9-6, 15 cards in the pack.
Yeah. Well, plus I also had two checklist cards.
Which are...
Checklist card's an automatic L. That's a loser.
But in the grand scheme, you would take those L's, like if just on the basis of like if anytime you got a checklist card, normally it was like, well, that's a waste. They owe me one.
Yeah.
But I would have traded those two checklists to get those other great players that you got.
Absolutely.
My greatest player was, do you remember who my greatest player was in my pack?
No, I've already forgotten.
Yeah, Steve Garvey.
Oh, that's right.
Steve Garvey. So hated.
Oh.
So hated. But I did get two Cubs. Gary
until,
Woods and
until
Jay
recently.
Johnstone, yeah.
Until recently, Steve Garvey was the most famous American Nazi. I needed to get a little bit of that Steve Garvey spite out there since the Magnificent episode is gone.
Believe it or not.
So, yeah. Wow. So, anyway.
Fascist. Get away. I'll be too reckless.
So, it was a beautiful journey down memory lane and thinking about some of these great players and some of these fun times. And it's all gone.
Yeah. It's all so, gone. So we're going to recreate that in a sense with some other cards now that you're sending to me.
Yes.
So yeah. That's. And I think it'll end up working just as well. So
I think so.
I'm excited.
I am too. So that's going to be coming soon. We thought we've already done it by now, but the U.S. Postal Service is on day 6 of delivering a priority mail 2-day package. So,
good joy.
They may not have gotten the election, but they're still getting their pound of flesh.
So, has this rekindled or kindled in you any particular kind of love for the baseball card?
You know what? Actually, this is going to sound really dopey. My love for baseball cards had actually been rekindled earlier this year, earlier in 2020, I should say. And the reason for that is because of the, you got to follow me, this is a little bit of a journey, the PlayStation game MLB The Show, okay? So this is it's a baseball simulation game, and it comes out every year. And there is you acquire players, and there's a whole, like, one of the ways you can play the game is that you acquire players through acquiring packs of cards.
Oh, okay.
And when you get a player in a pack of cards, you now can use that player in any of the ways, like you'll play sometimes mini games against the computer, you play mini games against somebody else, or you can play like online against other people. So you can build teams out of cards that you've collected.
Very good.
Okay. And they do a really beautiful blend of contemporary players and historic players. So, like, for example, one of the first really exciting cards you could get this year was a Jackie Robinson card.
Oh, very good.
Which was really sweet, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was, and so I have been playing that game with more of my free time than I would have expected, because I love to get more cards and then they've got all, like, as often as is the case with real baseball cards, they've got special collections. Like, they've got a whole collection of signature cards, which are all-time greats, where they've got a picture and they've got a, like, an autograph on the card, right? And these cards are all, like, super high rated. So any player is rated anywhere from, like, 50 to 99. 99 is the top. And, you know, and most of these signature cards are 99s. So there are different special collections that you can either get those cards in packs, or you can earn them through other, like, accomplishing other missions and things like that. Or you can just buy them by having accumulated enough points in the game.
Okay. That's up.
So, cool. So yeah. And I mean, I have been having a stinking blast doing that, you know, building super teams. So I've got a team of all the best Cubs I could get my hands on. Would you like to know everyone who's on that team, by the way?
Yes, tell me now.
Okay. The best catcher I could actually get. And this is one of the funny things they do. So with certain types of players, like, they're giving each player a number, again, from, like, roughly 50 to 99 based on their ability. But there are also players who, like, if they had a particular hot stretch or a signature moment or a highly rated prospect or something like that, that they have special cards that have elevated numbers.
Okay.
Okay. So that are basically based on, like, this is what this player projects to, or this is what this play. You and I have talked sometimes about the fact that Dusty Baker, one of the challenges we had with Dusty Baker as the Cubs manager was that Dusty seemed to look at every player as being as good as they were on their best day ever.
Right.
Like, a player hit four home runs once. In Dusty's mind, he puts that guy in the lineup every day because that guy can hit four home runs.
Or he hit four home runs, like, over the course of 2 weeks. Right. I mean, was Nathan Perez kind of the pinnacle example
probably.
Of a guy? Or was it, was Willie Harris a guy?
Oh, yeah, Willie Harris was a guy, too, at that time. Yeah. So,
and he's now the Cubs' third base coach, by the way.
Oh, see? Willie, if you want to come on the show, we'd love to talk. So, but that's, so that's what the experience of, like, watching a Dusty Baker team was like. But then that means you can get in the game, you can get a player who, so, like, my best catcher, the best catcher I had access to is Cubs prospect Miguel Amaya.
Okay.
The best Cubs catcher, because he rated in the mid to high 80s, actually, as a top prospect. So I had him. I had a special Anthony Rizzo card at first. I had Ryan Sandberg at second. And he was, like, it was his signature card. So it was, like, an elite, like, a 99 rating. I had Javi Baez, a special card for the year. He won the Silver Slugger, so he was super high rated. I had Chris Bryant for the year he won the MVP, so super high rated. I had Ernie Banks for the year he won the MVP. So that's already too many infielders. You can see I had some depth going on there. Then I, in the outfield, I had, let me think, who did I have? I had Billy Williams. Buying the Billy Williams card was maybe my favorite part of the whole season, because it was a card I hadn't earned through anything else, but I saw that he was out there and I was like, I am freaking buying Billy Williams.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I love to play Billy Williams, and they do. And then who did I have in center field? Oh, center field. I actually have Ian Happ, because they had Ian Happ for one of the spectacular things he did in early 2020. This is the other thing. Sometimes during the season, like, players did amazing things in 2020. They immediately issued a special card. So, like, Alec Mills threw a no-hitter in 2020.
Right.
He's got a 98 rated card. because he threw that no hitter. Now that doesn't mean that he's an impossible pitcher to hit. I mean, he's, but it's a better, it's pretty close to Alec Mills on his best day.
So almost what they're doing is creating alternate versions of players.
Exactly. Yes.
So you're pitching maybe in that case, Alec Mills, but it's not necessarily Alec Mills, but it's not like a made up name, like, you know, Thor Slabchest.
But again, it's
still, and you're doing it based upon something that he did. So there's a certain element of where it would appear like something that he could do. It feels genuine.
It's right. So it's kind of like this is, you know, we have a sense that Alec Mills on his best day could look like this based on the fact that he threw a no hitter, you know, and they do a really good job with the visuals. So it really does look like these players. And they, like pitch movement, of course, you got to know the first pitcher that I locked up and maxed out his card's potential was, what do you think?
It was a pitcher.
My favorite. Think, who do you think is my favorite pitcher all time?
Greg Maddux.
That's exactly right. And I still love using Greg Maddux because he'll throw the sinker and then you'll throw the circle change, and you watch batters. It just sort of like it's there, and then it just sort of drifts away from them. And they never do hit. I mean, they occasionally hit it, but many times they don't hit it. It's, oh, so much fun. So anyway. So it actually replicates a lot of stuff like that. So I had Nick Castellanos in right field because of his spectacular half of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. In addition to Greg Maddux as a pitcher, I had Yu Darvish for his 2020 season. I had Alec Mills. I didn't really use him usually because I had Fergie Jenkins, Cy Young Award card.
Always.
Oh, so good. So honestly, like my favorite set of my lineup. So these are just Cubs that I had, right? I had Bruce Sutter when he won the Cy Young. I had a Lee Smith card. So just great cards. But then I could do other things. I could put together a team of my favorite black players from immediately after integration, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got like, so I could have like, the only position I didn't have a spectacular, like, or like a really, really good, I didn't have a good catcher. Like I didn't have Roy Campanella. Wanted Roy Campanella. Couldn't get him. But I had like Willie McCovey and, Jackie Robinson, Ernie Banks and, Willie Mays and Billy Williams and, and then my pitching staff was Fergie Jenkins and Bob Gibson and Jose Marichal. This brought back love of baseball cards for me. Because I was like, the idea of opening those packs and seeing what am I going to get inside of this one building that ultimate team. Because we used to do stuff like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You play games.
Absolutely.
Like who had the better team of cards that you had. But then you get to go do it in the video game. So yeah, I was primed for getting back to baseball cards. How about for you?
I've kind of had a slow, you know, a continuing kind of burn, you know, it's never gone away completely.
Yeah.
And I still keep trying to remember where I had a big binder full of baseball cards that I collected as a kid. And I did a lot of buying of older cards then too when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So in the, you know, mid to early 80s, I was using money I had to buy cards from like the 50s and 60s. And I can't find that binder.
Oh. So,
but there's a 1959 Mickey Mantle in there that needs to be found. But,
yeah, I would say so.
But I enjoy baseball cards tremendously. And while I don't like I don't like the substrate they're using now, kind of a glossier paper.
Yeah.
I miss the cardboard. They are doing some interesting things. And I like when they use some of the old designs with modern players, or they'll do, you know, occasionally get like an old player with the modern design card, things like that.
Well, that's fun.
I think that's fun, because I do like a lot of the design and style of baseball cards.
Right.
Going back a ways. And I have more recently been interested in cards that are non-standard. Either baseball cards that are, well, like Topps cards that aren't about a sport.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes. Some of those I find interesting.
Yeah.
And then there's these artist-made cards.
Okay.
So someone will make a card for a player in a style that was not at all anything like, you know, any official card that was released. Or do something different. I've heard of Gypsy Oak.
No.
It's this studio, and they make these little tiny mini cards of players all across the spectrum of baseball history. They've done this at least for a number of years. They make some other stuff too. And then they sell them out of like a coin operated vending machine.
Wow. That's cool.
And so there's like almost like postage stamp size. And it's just these rough drawings. Initially they're like, you know, these rough drawings of a player's face. Sometimes now they've used like photos, and they'll like have players going back like to the dead ball era. But then they'll stick in, like, you might see a complete sheet of them, or a strip of them, maybe of like five, and you'll have like Joe Cronin and Ken Griffey Jr., maybe another modern player, and then Chewbacca and Han Solo. And it's, you know, they just kind of throw in these other little cultural folks. Or they've done then where they had like Moonlight Graham card, or a Roy Hobbs card, you know, things cool. like that. Yeah, I find, and then there's a whole series of just in the standard size. It's just kind of this, like ACO cards, artist created editions and originals. And there's like ATCs, I think they call them, like artist trading cards.
Okay.
Where people will just, and they're not even necessarily always like sports cards. They're just maybe even just like regular, like, you know, paintings or drawings or things like that. But there are people that there's a kind of a subculture of people making their own baseball cards. And when they say making their own, now there are some people that make them and they're trying to do kind of forgeries of existing cards.
Okay.
That's not what interests me necessarily. It's the ones that are a card that would never existed before.
Sure. Sure.
And someone drew it themselves or came up with their own design or style for it. I think those are very interesting.
That is cool.
And then Topps started something called Project 70.
Okay.
For their 70th anniversary, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they had certain players, or they got certain artists involved and had them make cards based upon, like, they picked a player. It's annoying me right now because they've done a whole bunch, and of course, the majority of them are like Yankees and Dodgers. And
well, sure. That's, everyone likes the Yankees and Dodgers. That's, they're all, baseball's all about.
So, right. But, you know, I like that idea of something a little bit different, taking kind of the medium. I like the medium in its traditional form.
Yeah.
Particularly it's more traditional, you know, it's early traditional form.
Yep.
Some of how it's evolved is cool as well. But I also then like kind of putting, you know, taking a little twist on that too.
I like that too. So wait, these cards you're doing, they're called Gypsy Oak?
Gypsy Oak is the studio that's made them. And see, you've introduced me to other, where people do baseball themed memorabilia, where they'll draw and they'll like postcards and things like that. Yeah. I think this is a very similar sort of vein to that. It's kind of artist generated baseball content.
Cool.
Like really your one way of kind of interacting with a baseball player from an artistic standpoint was a baseball card, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But coming up with these other ways, whether it's postcards, these artist created cards, other things like that, I think that's kind of fun. I think that really can help to cement someone's interest in, or draw them further into a love of baseball by helping them to engage other interests or loves or talents they have, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
well, and you and I think we talked one time before about the pack of cards that I got of Negro League players.
Yeah, yeah.
That are all they're derived from paintings that an artist has done of all of these players. And so the picture on the card is their painting, and then the back are facts about them and info about them. So yeah, there are a lot of really fun ways. That is really cool. I got to look some of that stuff up. I like that.
There is a right now, and I'm thinking of buying it, a kind of in the old Cracker Jack card style, which would have been like going back to like the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
It was these, they weren't quite the same size as the other, a little closer to square. And it was a red background, and it said Cracker Jack, ball players at the top, and mm-hmm. then it'd be a picture of the player. Somebody has made one in that style,
yeah.
but it's a Joe Biden baseball card. It's Joe Biden in an old Washington Senators uniform.
Oh, gosh.
And then it's Sleepy Joe Biden, which is kind of taking that nickname for Joe Biden and putting it on its ear, because as a baseball player, that could be, you know, that wouldn't necessarily be... and then, you know, a name meant to childishly mock, but, you know.
That's right.
So I thought that was very interesting. It's kind of an interesting twist on taking culture and history and integrating it with a really well-loved format being baseball cards.
I like that. I like that a lot. You've given me some new stuff to look for. That's cool. Excellent.
And somebody else has started making Braille baseball cards.
Oh, nice. Wow.
So they're wood, and it's got the picture, but it's raised. And then there's Braille, you know, Braille text or characters. I'm not sure exactly what you call it. Unfortunately, I feel like I should know that better. But, yeah.
That's really cool. I love that. Well, this has been great to hear about. This is, like I said, there's new stuff I got to go dig after now. My wife's going to be excited.
I don't know that she is.
Listen, if it makes me stop buying hats, she'll probably accept it.
Are you on a hat buying binge?
Well, I am a little bit. And I'm looking here in my office where I am right now. I have... I was counting earlier because I was going to ask you if you thought I had a problem. I currently have 34 hats, most of which are Ebbets Field flannels.
Right, so not necessarily inexpensive hats.
Not in any way expensive. No. Yeah.
Now, I have a large number of hats as well, and Eileen does not see the purpose. She apparently goes with that theory, you only have one head. But... I go with the theory there are 365 days in a year and 24 hours in each of those days.
Right.
And I may live to be about 80.
Yep.
So, well, I'm not saying I need a new one for every day or every week or every month. I'm just saying, you know, I don't want to wear the same hat all the time.
Correct. Well, I mean, I've gotten to the point, I want my hat to sometimes coordinate with what I'm wearing.
Very nice.
You know,
is the next step going to be that you're going to wear a suit that's all made of the same fabric and your shoes will match?
Probably.
Your tie will be the same.
Yeah, it's probably what I'm going to do.
I admire that. So that's good.
The other thing is I have, again, the last couple of years, I've always really been fascinated by the Negro Leagues and things related to the Negro Leagues. And and in particular, in the last couple of years, I've been adding to my collection of Negro League hats. So hang on. I'm going to make this a little noisy for a second because I got to move the mic so that I can look. I can tell you the whole collection of Negro League hats that I have right now. I have the Kansas City Monarchs, home and road.
Mm.
I got the Cleveland Buckeyes. I've got the Chicago American Giants, classic team from Chicago in the early 20s. Yep. I have the Cienfuegos Elefantes,
is
technically a Latin club, but a lot of black players would play there in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
I have Homestead Grays, St. Louis Stars, the Birmingham Black Barons.
Three
B's. Yeah. This was this now three of the most recent ones I got that I just got from Ebbets Field, particularly exciting to me. One of them is the Cincinnati Tigers, which was only a team for like 1 year, but they managed to find a picture of it and they replicated the hat. Another one was a team called the Wichita Monrovians from the early 20s. So in Wichita, there was a society of black professionals, and they sponsored a baseball team, which they named the Monrovians after the capital city of Liberia. And this team actually at one point played a game against a Ku Klux Klan assembled team.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So I have a Wichita Monrovians hat. And then, and this that might be my favorite. And if it's not that one, then my favorite is the Denver White Elephants. The Denver White Elephants was another team that that played and most famously, at one point, Satchel Paige joined the team just to play in the annual Denver Post baseball tournament. So the Denver Post every year would have a semi-pro tournament that was open to anybody. And black teams started playing in the tournament because it wasn't just a black tournament, but they were allowing black teams in. And so the White Elephants were a team of a local semi-pro team from Denver, and they got Satch to come and play 1 year for them.
Oh, very nice.
And they won the tournament.
Really? No figure.
Yeah. So I've got that one, and then maybe again, I keep saying my favorite because this is the point. They've got such good stories behind them. My other one that I love so much, Santurce Cangrejeros.
Mm.
Santurce, again, one of the Latin teams that a lot of stars would go and play. And there was 1 year that I believe that Willie Mays and Roberto Clemente were on the team at the same time for the same season.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, that's a good outfield right there. and so I've got that one as well. So I look at him like, today I want to wear a black hat. Today I want to wear a red hat or a green hat or a blue hat, you know? So, yeah. So if I stop buying hats and I start buying cards, then maybe, I mean, at least the cards are smaller, so she won't notice them as easily.
And in many cases, the cards will be cheaper, unless you're really aiming for,
this is true,
higher and desirable cards. There are a lot of cards out there of players that you would find interesting. Yeah. And they don't have to necessarily be as expensive because apparently the baseball card market has really exploded during the pandemic.
Wow.
So you've got these, you know, you've got, what was it? The Antonio Davis, Chicago boy who plays now for the Lakers, I think.
Yeah.
His rookie basketball card sold for $1 million recently. And I just don't understand that. I think Antonio Davis is a great basketball player. He might've been a great baseball player too. Who knows? He's a great basketball player. But there's this end of the market that I don't understand. Even like the, you know, what is it? The one, is it a T206 or whatever?
That's super rare. Right. Yep.
And that's sold for, you know, millions of dollars when they find those. I guess that's rare enough that I start to understand that. But like these modern cards selling for that much doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
But there are very few cards that hit those heights. And even like those heights of when we were spending like $65 or $55, as you might on a hat.
Yes.
On a card, you can get all kinds of cards of great players that you love or interesting players or a team that you love or interesting period of time or design, you know, for $25 or less.
Yeah.
So.
That makes sense.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, listen, maybe we should call it a day there.
Let's do it.
So again, be forewarned, everybody, we are going to have an upcoming episode where we're going to take another deep dive into baseball cards from the 80s. And it's going to be great. It's not going to, here's the thing. The Lost episode is probably like the godfather of our podcast episodes.
It's like that movie that, who's the telethon guy, Jerry Lewis, made about a clown, in the Holocaust who helped to bring children into the ovens. But, it's kind of like that. People are going to talk about it for a long time.
They are.
There's going to be word, you know, here or there that something was said or came up. Mm-hmm. Or there's a certain matchup, and you never know. It's I don't think there's not going to be a way, unless somehow Zencaster sometime down the road says, oh, we have all these recordings from this period of time when things glitched, and we actually found them somewhere on a server, and here you go.
Right.
Well, then we'll gather together some of our friends like Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra, and maybe we'll play that episode for them.
That could be. That's right.
But we're going to move forward. We're going to move forward and do whatever, like Jerry Lewis did.
But I was going to say, like, I think that Lost episode, that might have been our godfather, but yeah. I believe that when we make a new episode, it's fully capable of being like Godfather 2. So
I do as well. Yeah.
By the way, did you know that Godfather 2 was the first movie that that rejected the idea of appending Electric Boogaloo to the title? Originally, this is Pacino's idea. He was like, I'm not going to do a Pacino voice, but we should call it Godfather 2 Electric Boogaloo.
It's got to be Godfather 2 Electric Boogaloo. That was not a great Pacino.
And
he was sitting with Sean Connery at the time, and Sean Connery said, there's a lot of things that make sense, but that's not one of them.
That's exactly what he said.
That was an amazing conversation that we really only have through hearsay.
Since Sean Connery's not with us anymore, and if you saw Al Pacino recently on the Golden Globes, it kind of looks like he's not with us anymore either.
He's quite aged now, so I cut him some slack.
Yes. Yes, but for a while, he's really leaned into the looking like something's not right.
Fair enough.
I love Al Pacino, but yeah. Anyway, all right.
Well, on that note, having insulted one of the premier actors of our generation.
One of the lions of the film industry.
Of cinema.
Yeah.
We will bid you adieu.
Which one did we insult, by the way? Was it?
Well,
we did insult Al Pacino.
I think I kind of insulted Jerry Lewis.
You did kind of insult Jerry Lewis, and then you did an impersonation of Sean Connery, who recently died. So, we've covered all our bases, I think.
Yeah,
that's good.
I think we're good.
we're good. Our place in hell is well reserved once again.
See you there.
All right. Well, everybody, we're going to do this again soon now that we have things working again. And yes. We just wanted to we want to talk. We wanted to say hi. And we'll be back again soon. All right. Kevin, indeed. Until then.
All right. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.